Call to order the February 14th, 2023 business meeting of Simpsonville City Council. Administrator Gracely, will you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Gage. Councilmember Root.
Here.
Councilmember Houlihan.
Here.
Councilmember Roche.
Here.
Councilmember Cummings. Councilmember Hutchins.
Here.
Mayor Schumaker.
Here. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on our agenda is the audit presentation by Mr. Phillips from Green, Finney & Colley. Mr. Phillips, if you would, please come to the microphone at the podium and you can start your presentation when you're ready.
Great, thank you. I think you probably have already received probably a report, maybe electronically, maybe you have a hard copy as well. But you know, what we have found based on past practice is trying to flip through that 200-page book doesn't go so well. And trying to hit the highlights though on PowerPoint is a lot more effective. So as I go through the PowerPoint, if you have questions, please stop me and I'll be glad to answer those. If you want to wait to the end, that will work as well. All right, well, we like to always remind everybody about the importance of internal controls. And one of the things that we do as your auditors is that we look at your significant internal control processes and we kick those tires. And if we see that there's issues, it's not only important that I talk to Christine and Diana about that, it's important that you be made aware of it. But for example, let's say we saw that bank recs weren't being prepared or not done timely. It's important that you know about that, because how can you fix it if you don't know there's a problem? And so that's one of the things we're doing behind the scenes. And then we like to remind you, too, that these are your financial statements. And so our responsibility, which is on the next slide here, is to issue an opinion. We look at things from a materiality perspective, which is around 1% to 2%. Now, some of you, that would be way too high. You would care about a dime. There's some of you would be fine with 5% closeness. So, but the way the professional standards were drafted was there needed to be a cost-benefit factor that couldn't be so detailed that your audit fee would be 10 times more than what it is to get it down to a dime. And so they came up with this materiality concept of around 1% to 2% there. We have issued an unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion. If we issued a modified opinion, we would say everything looks good except for maybe capital assets or for debt or whatever it might be. So we were not aware of anything materially misstated. The format of the opinion has changed. So if you looked at that inside of the financial statements, instead of it being 2 pages, professional standards have made it now 3 pages. It's so much clearer. But one good thing about it, I will say, is in the very first section, it talks about, you know, what have we looked at and what our opinion is. So you don't have to look into the middle of the opinion anymore. If you stop in the very first section, it will, we kind of disclose what we looked at and what our opinion is right there. All right, let's keep going here. Let's look at your fund balance. The total fund balance increased about $600,000. Now remember, you had adopted a policy whereby you were going to transfer 75% of your net increase into a capital projects fund. And so that took place. It increased $600,000 even after we transferred $3 million to the capital projects fund, which was for the last 2 years. So just kind of be aware that that took place. You have various components of fund balance. One is restricted, which means those monies can be only used for very restricted or designated purposes. And some of that will be always unspent bond proceeds. It could be certain monies that you receive that, you know, it could be a grant or whatever, but you know, there's some restrictions on those. There's a little bit of non-spendable, but look at the chart there. I think this chart is kind of very helpful. As you look over time, you can see how you've constantly been able to grow your fund balance and build reserves there. And so we go to the next slide, and this is the category that most people care the most about. It's called the unassigned category. And it was a total balance of 18.2. It was 17.7 million in the prior year. And so you right now have about 92% of your 2022 actual expenditures available that you could cover on an annual basis there. If we look at your 23 budget, you have about 82%. Remember now, the GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers Association, they're kind of like the Bible of governance. They recommend a minimum of 2 months. And so you can see you've done extremely well there. And when you look at your own minimum fund balance policy that you've established of 25, you've done very well in that regard. All right, so why do you want to have a strong fund balance? Well, remember, some of your revenues only come at certain times of the year. You know, property taxes go out at a certain time. Most people pay those real property taxes, you know, in December, January, February, and they've pretty much been paid. You don't collect a lot more the rest of the year there. Remember, it also helps you if you have emergencies, unanticipated expenditures. If you don't have any fund balance, you don't have a lot of options. You may have to borrow, you may have to do different things to meet an emergency. It gives you flexibility. So if you have a building project, you may say, you know what, we may borrow half of it, but we're going to use some of our fund balance for the other half because we actually have money set aside. When you issue debt, you'll get better interest rates. You know, it allows you to plan better, you know, kind of how you're going to finance a project. And, you know, just the times that we live in, it's very important to keep kind of a contingency fund, an emergency fund there too. All right, well, let's look at your revenues. Your general fund revenues were $23 million. We kind of list the big components there. Of course, property taxes, and then business licenses and permits and stuff like that. Your revenue increased $1.9 million. I think what's interesting about that, you actually increased your property taxes, but the millage actually went down 3.8 mils. So that's pretty impressive that you lowered the tax rate, but your revenue has still gone up because you continue to see tremendous growth in the area. As it relates to your budget, you came in about 3.4 million over budget, 17%, and it's kind of in those same areas. And part of it too is your staff is going to be fairly conservative. They're not going to just take what you collected last year and say, okay, we're going to collect 5% more. They're discounting that a little bit just in case there's a pullback in the economy or something that takes place so you don't get caught short there. All right, well, let's look at your general fund expenditures. They were $19.8 million, and you can see the biggest buckets, but the biggest one pretty much for our municipalities is public safety. It was $11.4 million. We generally see that anywhere from about 45 to 55% of a municipal government. And then you see the other departments there as well. You actually had a slight decrease, but it's a little bit misleading because remember, you took your sanitation and you moved it over to the public works fund. So that's why there was actually a slight decrease. But when you compare it to your budget, because you had already had reflected that in your budget, you actually still came under budget by about $600,000 there. And remember, you're budgeting as if your staff is going to be there all year long. And, you know, the economy we live in today, people are moving. And so you're not always fully staffed for the whole year. All right, well, let's look at some of your other funds. Your accommodation and hospitality tax fund. Remember, these are restricted funds. Had approximately $18.5 million in fund balance. $4.5 million was restricted for tourism-related expenditures. Those are kind of like your normal, age tax revenues that come in that can only be used. But remember, too, last year, you issued some debt. And those bonds and so forth, those monies are restricted for the capital projects for which they relate to as well. So you did have regular tourism hospitality tax revenues of $3.1 million, expenditures of $1.9 million, and then you used some of that excess to help cover some of the construction costs on the Arts Center. You transferred that over there to help cover some of those costs. Now, remember, too, last year, through the Simpsonville Municipal Facility Corporation Fund, you issued some installment purchase revenue bonds, and you still have a lot of, most of those monies sitting there ready for these construction projects as well. And so, again, those monies are sitting there at about $12.5 million, but they're restricted for those very projects that we all are hoping is going to start really soon. All right, let's go to the next slide. Remember, too, there is some new funds that became available through the American Rescue Plan Act. And so what we did is we set up a fund so you could really clearly track it. And I know sometimes these financial statements get kind of hard and difficult sometimes to look at. But I think one thing that's nice, if you ever pull them open, there's a column for that. So you can see how much money is coming into it and where your how much is being spent. And we also, you know, this year created the Capital Projects Fund where you're beginning to set aside. Remember that $3 million we talked about transferring? That money's coming in there, and over time, as you begin to transfer more, you'll be setting aside funds for future projects where Diana then will sit down and say, hey, we've got this amount of money saved, and now we got millions of projects. What are your priorities on how we address those? And so it gives you a kind of a funding, initial funding mechanism there as well. But again, let's look at this American Rescue Plan Fund. You had a little over, right at $6 million that came in. You spent about $455,000. And the way this grant works, until you incur eligible expenditures, you have to defer it. It has to be unearned. So if you looked at those fund financials, you're going to see some assets up there, but you're going to see this big unearned liability. Until you incur expenditures, then it will be recognized as revenue to offset the expenditure. So just kind of be aware that that's coming. And remember, you got your second tranche of the money. It came in October, and it's about $6 million. And it's now, if you looked at your subsequent financial statements, you would see that probably moving over into the unearned category until you spend it. The Capital Projects Fund, we kind of mentioned before, but remember, you transfer that money over, and that money has been assigned for future projects as well, and we list that policy there so that you're kind of aware, you know, we're going to, every year, if we have a good year, we're going to transfer 75% into that fund. All right, well, let's keep going. Let's look at your super fund there. You see there that you had approximately $19.8 million in net position, of which about $5.3 million is unrestricted. You had a really healthy increase over the prior year. But I will say this, remember, you take a lot of donations of sewer infrastructure. So a lot of your increase is donated under the ground stuff you never see. And ultimately, you're going to have to keep it up. And so that's why you want to build up reserves in that position there so you can cover the repair work, because those pipes just don't go on indefinitely, and it costs a lot of money to dig them up and to repair them and replace them. Let's look at briefly at your Public Works Fund. Had approximately $2.4 million in net position at year end, of which about $900,000 was unrestricted. A slight decrease there, but remember, you're using that to help fund you know, various vehicles and equipment for sanitation. But remember, part of that helps you with roads, some of your road pavings and stuff. So you've got a dual purpose there that's taking place with that fee. All right, want to remind you about the pension plan. Remember, you participate in the state pension plan, and that fund or that plan is very underfunded. But one of the nice things that happened this year is that the liability really went down for a lot of our clients because they value this thing at always June 30th, but they do it 1 year earlier than your actual financial statement report. And if you could flip back in time, and if you could go back to June 30th of 21, the investment performance was really high at that time. So if the overall market value of the pension funds are doing really good at June 30th of a given year, that will lower that pension liability. Well, unfortunately, at June 30th of 22, it didn't look so good. And it's probably going to flip back when we do your next year's audit. So just kind of give you a heads up. The real takeaway here is the second to last bullet point, they're raising rates. And they've been raising them 1%, 1%, and we're almost at the very end of that. If you look what the final employer rate is going to be, 18.56, in 21.24. Remember, employees are also paying another 9%. So think about how much money is actually going to the state on every dollar. There's a lot of money trying to shore up the state pension plan. All right, let's keep going. Briefly look at your capital assets. An increase of $8.8 million over the prior year. You had additions of $12.4 million. You had a number of construction projects. Most of the big ones are coming, though. You had about $1.9 million in the Arts Center, some startup and architectural stuff on the municipal complex and park project, and some sewer and some streetscape. Remember, too, Greenville County, you know, they gave back to you or donated to you the fire station number 6. So we have to reflect that when they give that to you. And they also gave you a fire truck, too. So we had both of those coming in last year. Then on down, we talk about road infrastructure and improvements. But then there's where the big number on the utility infrastructure additions. There's a lot of donated infrastructure. So, you know, you will have, various, subdivisions and sewer infrastructure that is, given over to the city there. Then remember, when we capitalize something, we begin to depreciate it over its estimated useful life, and so that goes the other direction. All right, let's look at briefly at your long-term obligations. Had a balance of 38.8. Not a lot of activity this year. You just really kind of made your payments. You know, it's like your mortgage payments on your house. You just made principal payments, and there's a little amortization that totaled up to about $2 million. Remember, you have a legal debt limit. A margin of about 9.1. So if you wanted to issue general obligation bonds without having to do a referendum, you as council could prove up to 9.1 million in GOB debt. The debt service payments in fiscal year 23, the year we're in now, is about 2.9. So that's just your mortgage payment on the debt that you have outstanding as of June 30th of 2022. All right, wanted to mention just some accounting changes. We had to implement a new standard on leases, but you didn't really have any significant long-term leases, so it wasn't very applicable. Next year, we have to look at IT agreements. So if you enter into a long-term IT agreement, let's say you are going to rent software, it's $100,000 a year for 10 years. If that's significant, we have to set up a liability and an asset, a right-to-use asset for $1 million. They want it to be shown on the balance sheet on your statement of net positions there. So that will be for fiscal year 23. All right, we did have two items we needed to just mention to you. One of them relates to, remember, y'all are trying to increase your earnings investment return on some of your investments. So you moved them into like treasury bills and notes. Well, these statements are a little bit complicated, but they have all these columns for cost, market, and all this across. The staff inadvertently pulled the wrong column when they recorded it in the ledger. And so that was the difference. So all we did was we just got them to go back and record it at market value. So that was the first item. The second item is you moved some monies from one bank to another bank in the month of June, and they didn't collateralize your deposits in time. So when you put money, if you're a government, you put it with a bank, they need to provide collateral to protect you because that's kind of state law. It took them until July or later till all that took place. So we always just have to make you aware, but I don't really think it's a big deal, but that was something that was there as well. On the management letter, which is a separate letter we send to you, if there were issues, like if management was difficult to deal with, or if we thought something needed to be recorded and management didn't want to record it, we would have to let you know that. And there were no issues like that. Yes.
If you could pause for just a moment. I just want the audio record to reflect that Councilmember Kim Cummins has joined the meeting. If you can continue.
Okay, great. Last slide. I'm sorry. You probably got the best end of this. you have an unmodified opinion, which is a good thing. Really have strong financial condition. I mean, you really have the ability to address challenges from a number of different fronts, whereas a lot of people might not. And the staff here are just really, really good to work with. It's nice when they're right down the street, too, but it's just they're really pleasant and they really care about what they do. I'll open the floor for any questions, because I know I kind of go quick, but most people like that. Any questions?
Questions or comments for Mr. Phillips? Just a couple really quick. First of all, in the absence of Councilmember Gooch, and you would have stolen his thunder a little bit, but he would have been quick to point out that not only did we not raise the millage, but we lowered the millage. And so I was glad to hear you point that out as well. And so just mention it again in his honor. And then I just want to thank you and your firm for the work that you've done for us, but especially want to thank Administrator Gracely and Finance Director Christine Farino for their hard work, and all the city staff, of course, that make this go. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councilmember Houlihan.
I would just, it's not a question for him, but just a statement for all of us, that it's really good to see now that capital fund with some money in it, because that was a really, really good decision on the part of this council to do. When I came into office with Mr. Cummings in 2016, there was no plan for the future of capital expenses in this city. And if a truck broke down, a police car wore out, there was no plan for what we were going to do to replace it. And so it was a priority for us to figure out how to make that happen. And this capital fund and the commitment to put that money in there every year is a huge, huge gain for us as a city that people may not always recognize. And so I think that that's really important to point out, as well as the changes in the sanitation, the public works funds, to ensure that, again, not just this year, not next year, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, we're covered on the sewer, on roads, on the services from public works that our residents expect and deserve, in addition to being prepared for those capital expenses. So just to kind of reiterate those points that he made, that those were really important in any way that we can continue to help provide for the future of the city, not just the year that we're in, I think is incredibly important for the city.
Any further comments? Great, thank you. Next on our agenda is item 5, and before we go to that item, I want to publicly announce that this does constitute a public hearing for the Greenville County Redevelopment Authority, and we declare this hearing open. And I call on Ina Nwobodu from the GCRA to give her fiscal year 23 annual action plan report.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. It's always a pleasure being here. It's really wonderful. And I also want to introduce one of our new staff members, Francisco Arnaz. He's the Senior Community Development Planner. So he's here trying to figure out what we're doing. His presentation, Mayor?
Sure.
They have a copy in front of them. Okay, no need. Yes, going to hit the highlight points. You all know, we were all here last year, so it's important that we give the 2023 annual action plan, which is basically what it is, a plan that we send proposals to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, telling them what we're going to do with the federal funds, entitlement funds that come to the county. So two main funding sources that I'm going to talk about is the Community Development Block Grants and HOME, as usual, because the ESG, the Emergency Solutions Grant, is a funding that's available to our county. So that's actually the point that we can do things in the city of Greenville. So going straight directly to the fiscal year 2023, knowing, of course, it starts July 1 this year to June 30th, 2024, and it's also our fourth year and a five-year plan. So when we come back next year, we're going to do not just the public hearing, we're also going to do needs assessments, housing needs, homelessness needs, community, everything else, starting the next five-year plan. So during this fourth year, we're taking care of all that. So the first thing, community development block grants, you all know what it is, for the purpose of the public. It's really finding that we're able to do so many things as long as it serves low and moderate income family. We can also use it to address some blight, if we have area or demolition items, or disasters or emergency needs. So good thing during the COVID period, we've got special funding, so we didn't have to do that. The other funding, the home funds, is basically what it is. Home, it helps us to provide affordable rental housing, affordable homeownership housing. We could actually use it for down payment assistance and even rehab. So going into that, I'm going to go straight to your allocation so that you know what it is. The grant funds, of course, you have your numbers. What we do is we use the final number we get from HUD from the current year. So the fiscal year 2022, those numbers came to us in June. So we use it to start in 2023. So when we get the other numbers, we'll change everything. So the numbers, the final numbers, as you can see, is $167,109 for CDBG. And then home grant is $74,370. Your program income increased a little bit, and I'll explain what the program income is, because potentially when we sell the houses here, they will come back to you as program income. When we invest in a house or give somebody loan for rehab or anything, when they pay us back, whatever fund we use, if it was CDBG, it comes back to you as program income. So sometimes it's rental, when they're paying us back, when we do all, you know, net income comes back to you as program income. So if we use home, it comes back to you as program income. So those three houses, once we sell them, they come back to you as home program income. So just to let you know. So in having those total funds and your total program income funds, both CDBG and home, we are projecting, this is estimated, once we have the numbers, it will change, $259,979 total CDBG home PI numbers. In having those funds and meeting with your administration, we talked about the things that we'll continue to do. The facade has been very, very excellent program that people use, and we have some in the pipeline that we're looking at, as well as economic development loan. Those two programs, you have a new package. We provide business loans to first-time business, you know, small businesses, up to $25,000 and things like that. But the major part of the CDBG fund for this year, we are going to set it aside with the additional fund you have balance after improvement to the senior center to help with the part that you're doing. So we will address ADA facilities on that part. So that's something we can do with CDBG money, because that's the area that will be an eligible activity for that. So once to the other, that's part we'll take care of. But of course, the home money we set aside for housing development. So we'll look at properties that we can build, or we can actually use it for rehab as well. You have two subrecipients, so we set aside the same amount funding level that you have, about $22,000. They all sent in their proposals yesterday. So we'll be sending you the recommendations that we have, and you can all take decide what you want to do. We're setting aside about $30,000 for demolition, for anything that we have to demo and take care of things. We did some demolition work last year. I did add the housing programs, but for the purpose of the public, I've just talked about a little bit of housing programs that they should know that is available to them as well, like home repairs for seniors or persons living with disability. We have up to $10,000, which is a grant, really. And even if they have to fix the house a little bit more, and it costs more than $10,000, that first trade is forgivable. The rest could be depending on the income and scale the interest for that payment. Homeowners, you can get up to $25,000, of course, depends on your income. The interest rate is extremely very low. Talk about the two emergency solutions program, because it's not funded specifically for city. We use it to help folks that are literally homeless, that we can provide deposit or short-term 1 or 2 months of rent for that. All of our COVID funds are completely expended, so we don't have any more, but we can use ESG funds for that. You can also have folks that are at risk of homelessness, either prevention or they've been sent eviction notice, we can actually help them. And if that particular house is too expensive, we can actually help them move them to another place. So that's two funding sources that we can, you know, provide to folks. The other two, we have an investor program that you set aside money in the past for. We really encourage property owners to come and get like a low interest loan, about $25,000, that he can use to fix that house. And it's a very low interest loan. Want to make sure that whoever you're not passing the cost to the tenant. So that's the idea of that. And it's $25,000. And we try to make the application really easy. So in a nutshell, we are requesting for the approval of the total funding. In your package, you saw some pictures. I didn't put the interiors, but the center, the community center is beautiful. We love it. It was a great partnership with the city as always, and using the big grant from the State Department of Aging was really wonderful to work with, and everybody in Diane's office was just incredible to work with as always. The houses in Woodside is still on the market, and we have what we call home buyer subsidy of up to $40,000 for any qualified low-mod persons to be able to purchase one of those houses. And in addition to that, they can also have access to down payment assistance of $10,000 that they can get through one of our partners, the Community of West Carolina, that can give them $10,000 down payment assistance, plus the up to $40,000 in subsidy. And if you have any questions, hope I ran through the numbers really fast.
Any questions from Ms. Lopez? All right, hearing none, let me ask if there are any oral or written comments from the public that are attending tonight for Ms. Nobadu. I'll also point out that the resolution to approve this will be put on the Committee of the Whole agenda coming up in 2 weeks. And then when it's approved there, we'll have to go to the business meeting, which will occur on the second Tuesday of March. So there are two more opportunities to make comment regarding the approval of this plan. And since there does not seem to be any comments from council or the public, we'll declare this hearing closed.
Thank you.
Next up,
feel free to call out all Facebook comments as well.
Sure. Right. Next up on the agenda is public comment. Just as a reminder to everybody who is here, in order to make public comment, you must have standing in the city, and you have to sign up at least 10 minutes prior to the beginning of the meeting. And after you're recognized, we ask speakers to speak from the podium and the audience to refrain from comments or clapping or similar demonstrations. When the speaker reaches the podium, you must state your name and address prior to beginning your remarks. Individual comments are limited to 3 minutes. There'll be a 30-second warning before time is set to expire. I use this light system up here. It goes green when your comments start. At 30 seconds, it will turn yellow, and when your 3 minutes is up, it turns red. You have to stop speaking when time has expired. Speakers are not allowed to concede any part of their time to another speaker. And it's a reminder that all remarks shall be addressed to council as a whole and not to any individual member of council. And the purpose of addressing council is to allow council members to hear the opinions of the citizens, and it's not intended to afford the opportunity to engage in a debate or dialogue. Therefore, there will be no reply or rebuttal by council members. Citizens are permitted to submit documents or exhibits to council by presenting them to the city administrator. Our city clerk isn't with us tonight, so present them to the city administrator. And as the presiding officer, I will rule non-germane, derogatory, disruptive, or repetitive comments out of order. And reading directly from our ordinance, the presiding officer shall have wide discretion in conducting the meeting and shall have the power to interrupt remarks at any time in the interest of expediting the orderly disposition of the business at hand. The presiding officer shall be obligated to prevent any party from unduly consuming the council's time. The presiding officer may clear the room of disruptive individuals or recess the meeting in the event of general disruption. So, having gone through that, we have one person who has signed up to comment, Chad O'Rear, if you would come to the podium. State your name and address and go ahead.
Chad O'Rear, 334 Jones Four Road. This is my fifth trip here. This is a little different topic from my normal four trips before this, but it does tie in nicely. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was triggered to come up here by a sign in two lots in my neighborhood, Village of Redfern. It was a buying sign, something about zoning, and there's a phone number, called phone number, it's here. Getting nowhere with the general phone number, I came up here to inquire about it. It was about a zoning request for a developer who had the last two lots in our neighborhood. And I was told, when I inquired about it, that they were going to build two duplexes on two pretty dang small lots. And as president of the HOA, I said, well, we don't agree with that. We don't want that done. It's gonna harm our property values tremendously, because there's two single-family homes, one of which is mine, next to it. And two, the danger of the cars that back into Jonesville Road. So we got two components there. We've got a component of the neighborhood does not want it, and the safety issues of the cars backing in the road, which already we have one neighbor doing that. I was told to pound sand. I was told that the planners were gonna sit at this table and tell the commission that that's what the city wanted, and that's what was gonna have to happen, because that's what the city wanted. So what happened after that was, when I said that, well, we're gonna fight it, my personal cell phone number was turned over to the developer by the city of Simpsonville. So I got a phone call from the developer while I was sitting on my sunroom porch, and I was proceeded to be insulted by that developer. My intelligence was insulted by asking if I knew what word atypical meant. He didn't think I knew what my covenants meant, and debated with me for about 45 minutes as to why he should pay the $8,000 they owed us for those two lots for not paying his bills. And so we came to this meeting, and we sat there and listened to Crescent Homes declare how they could build two duplexes. And I was told and warned and told not to talk to the commission about HOA policies. Well, I did just that. We won. We won 4-0, 4-0 vote. You go down Jonesville Road and you see the two houses they built, you see the two circular driveways, and you ask yourself if they could have built two duplexes with unlimited cars, unlimited people, that could have backed into Jonesville Road. And now you ask yourself, why 2 years later, year and a half, 2 years later, why I was told to pound sand and the city didn't care about what the neighborhood wanted and what the and the safety issues there, but we applied the same rules over at Hunter Street. The exact same rules. So I get my FOIA request back. The petition comes in, 13 signatures, all the 13 signatures. Only 10 of them wanted the street closed. Found out on April 28th in text messaging, it was all a hit job from the start. I can get it done for you, just get some signatures. You got 10.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rear. Next up on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the January 10, 2023 business meeting. Are there any corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved as written. And that brings us to business. Item 8A, first reading of TX2023-01, miscellaneous refinements to the zoning ordinance. Mr. Derby, will you summarize, please?
Yes, sir. Good evening, Council, Mayor. I'm going to go over the highlights of what this zoning update kind of entails. Kind of went over it last time. It was a lot of hectic that last meeting, but Section 212 refers to our downtown overlay requirement for pedestrian lighting. We're removing that section from the ordinance because we do not have a pedestrian lighting fixture picked out. So that section's been kind of passed over through the development we have. That has come along, so we're moving that section. We are defining signage, particularly to the downtown overlay district, that's separate from the standard business general location of West Georgia Road and Ferry Road. These are smaller in scale, but you see they're more pedestrian friendly. We are defining window signage in that section. The next two sections are pretty much repeated that. That's the other overlay district, removing pedestrian lighting and defining signage for that district. Section 3220, we are including car washes and with mechanic shops for the condition to develop. Those are required to have the service days for the automotive uses to be oriented away from public view for aesthetics. Car washes are pretty much the same setup. They have a tunnel, they have a bay, so we kind of incorporate them to be governed by the same regulations. 4.8, we revamped our lighting ordinance. Currently we have a very vague, it is enforceable to a point. This new guideline we have now has more set lighting levels and criteria we feel more confident with. It kind of mirrors the municipalities in Greenville County that they're going to as well. 4.9.3, we have a regulation now, or looking to have a regulation now that will help property owners in the commercial district to maintain their street trees and trees in general on their property. Very common method of pruning, over pruning crape myrtles in our city. It's not very aesthetically pleasing, help the visibility of their buildings. This will help regulate that and kind of educate them on how that should be handled and move forward. 4.10, window signage, we define that a little more stricter than we currently have, very vague as far as the percentage we allow. 4.10.5, we're reducing the neon signage, size of neon signage in the city. 4.10.6, we're defining window signage in the business, standard business district. We didn't have that, that was typically covered under wall signage, so it has a separate section separate from wall signage. 4.10.6, we basically shifted down everything because we included window signage. Residential district also has window signage requirement. And 8.5, lastly, is the definition portion. We're adding definition of foot candle and full cutoff fixtures that pertain to the light ordinance. Nothing has changed since the committee of the whole meeting. Answer
a
question about any one of these that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Durbin. Motion is in order. Councilmember Hutchings.
Mayor and Council, I'll make a motion to approve on first reading PX-2023-01, miscellaneous refinements to the zoning ordinance.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hutchings with a second from Councilmember Roche. Discussion? Councilmember Hutchings.
The removal of the pedestrian lighting requirements will be, I guess the downtown master plan requirements will supersede that as far as pedestrian lighting, is that correct?
Correct. The one reason we did have a lighting picked out was because we came in, so we didn't have anything to offer for developers to put on the sites. And plus, a lot of this would come into new development. And a new development comes in for those lightings, it would be very kind of hit or miss. We have new development with new lighting and then nothing from the old development, so the new downtown master plan will incorporate pedestrian lighting.
Councilmember Root.
So the specific verbiage for the signs that we're going to add, when a business owner came to town and did their permits and moved in, were they under? Did we tell them what they can do, what they couldn't, and they're doing these because it's not specific and they're waiting for us to get specific? Or is it more than doing it, not ask permission, kind of a thing? Like, what would you say, and to piggyback on that, how many violations would we be, how many would we foresee us having to change by making this more specific?
That's a good question. It's put on the property owners or business owners making the city to apply for business license to understand the zoning regulations, what you can't do when it comes to signage. We try to educate them as much as we can. Unfortunately, they kind of fall by the wayside. You get a new manager in there, they get corporate. Advertising comes in, they kind of just run with it until they're told no, basically. And a lot of the signs we have now, the people are within regulations that this curve will reduce. Those are what we call the non-conforming. They can stay currently as is on the property. So this would not affect current owners, it would affect new businesses coming in.
Mr. Durbin, will you point the microphone to the
collection? With all signage change we've had in the past, any signs that are already currently there are legal non-conforming. So again, this would affect new businesses that come into the city. They have to abide by the zoning that's currently on the books. And that's what this would do.
So no, we can't go to a current sign that would be in violation of these and enforce it until there's new, maybe ownership of that.
Correct. It was permitted under the current It's my recommendation that it stay.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Rochette.
I have some concerns about 4.9.3 plant material standard and maintenance. I don't know if word got out between the last time this was mentioned with the crepe myrtles and tonight, but going up Ray Talley today, on like between like all in front of the one shopping plaza there and then the Days Inn into Walmart. They literally, it's nothing but a trunk, the crepe myrtle. You see the root structure and they just sawed it off.
Correct.
And that's just been done. And I just have to wonder if people aren't getting ahead of the ordinance and doing that, but is, I don't think that was a proper trim.
No, it's not.
It's gonna, they're gonna die, I mean.
They'll grow back and push, or shorter, not the true typical mushroom or crepe myrtle.
Right.
No, that's been pretty common with a lot of places. Grandview Road along with Walmart, a couple places do that. There's a lot of the older businesses that have had these trees for a very long time. They were never permitted or never reviewed during site plan approval. That's required trees. They put those in themselves and they basically, prune them how they feel. A lot of times it's a landscaper not even telling them to pop them or if they're doing, they're just telling them, we'll prune it.
Well, unfortunately, we have a city full of them. It seems to be the tree of Simpsonville is the crepe myrtle. Are we going to supply business owners with the ANCIA 300 standards for tree care operations?
We are.
Is that part of the plan for if you're going to have a business license, here's some things you need to know?
Again, that's typically required of business owners when they come in. They got to know zoning regulations. This particular one, we are being proactive and send letters to the property owners to have these trees to kind of educate them. This is your last chance to kind of understand the rules of the proper pruning of these trees moving forward. We don't have these nubbed trees on our streetscapes.
Yes, yeah, they're either nubbed or they're nubbed, and then they have all these little spindly branches Jeez. Where they're trying to grow back.
Yeah.
We have them in about 5 different stages.
Right.
And then on in the same category under I, where it lists all of the trees that have been deemed South Carolina exotic pet plant council invasive species. I'm having difficulty with the verbiage. I just think that it's a little too loose. If you're going to enforce something, we should just enforce it because it says shall be discouraged in any landscaped area or buffer. That's just kind of we discourage it, but we're not really saying you can't put these invasive species in. And then at the end, it says any party involved with the utilization of these trees may be held liable for damages caused thereby. And my problem would be the word may be held liable. The words may be held liable. Either they're going to be held liable or they're not. So if we're going to redo the ordinance, we need to do more than discourage it. And we need to do more than if you do, then you have to pay for any damages that may happen. So that would be my advice as far as redoing the ordinance. If we're going to redo it, let's really redo it and not cause you further anguish because that could become a back and forth
right.
with the business owner. So.
Further comments? So on 4.9.3, back to the crepe myrtles, is there an intention to enforce this on homeowners?
No, sir.
Okay. And a follow-up on what Councilmember Rochette was saying, where they whack down these crepe myrtles to stubs a foot or two high. After, if we enact this ordinance, if they whack crepe myrtles, a business whacks a crepe myrtle like that, the answer is, okay, you've just stunted that crepe myrtle. It's supposed to be a tree that provides some shade and canopy. You got to replace it, right? Would that apply to the specific crepe myrtles that Councilmember Rochette was pointing out? That after this is enacted, there's no grandfathering in your practice of cutting crepe myrtles to the ground. Right?
Correct. It's move forward after we send letters to these property owners, move forward proper pruning of these trees. The result would be replacing that tree.
Just as a personal comment, I have crepe myrtles on my property that have never been cut, and they're gorgeous. They are wonderful trees when they are allowed to be a tree, and especially beautiful in the spring. And then I think that concludes my comments. Any further comments or discussion? Okay, on the motion to approve on first reading of TX-2023-01, miscellaneous refinements to the zoning ordinance, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion carries unanimously. And with that, if there are no objections, we stand adjourned.